This is the 29th of May, 1976. Gerda and I are interviewing in the Junction City, Oregon area. What is your name, sir?
It's Hans Rasmussen.
Sounds a little bit Danish. Are you an immigrant?
No, I'm not.
Would you give us the background of your Danish ancestry, names, places, as much as you know?
My father's name was Ole Rasmussen. My mother's name was Meta Rasmussen. They happened to have the same back name. And they were both born in Sjælland. My father was born at Vindia, and my mother's name was born at Tuna, Roskilde. And they came to, they were married in Denver, Colorado. My father came to Mississippi first, and my mother followed, and then they went to Denver, where they were married. And my father worked in the gold mines while there, and then he bought a farm in Colorado, where they moved, and that's where that's where I grew up, close to a little town by the name of Brush. It was a Danish settlement there, and my folks were very active in the Lutheran Church, and that's when we came to Oregon. Then later, in about 1913, and this is where I was confirmed and actually grew up.
Do you know what year your parents came to this country?
I'm not sure what year they came. I believe it was approximately 1888. They were married in Denver. I think in about 1890.
Do you know why they left Denmark?
No, I've never heard them, either one of them, say why that they left Denmark. But just through my own kind of wondering why, I think that it was there was a trend of the young Danes to leave Denmark. I really don't know why, but I think that they were, it probably was a case of getting out and getting something on their own. In other words, I don't think that that working conditions were too good at that time, and that they just had to get out and find something.
Did your mother or father ever tell you any stories about leaving Denmark?
No, they, I've been kind of rather disappointed in the fact that we didn't find out more about those things, but we were a family of about seven children, and I really don't know why that we didn't know more about why the some of these things took place. But my father was an only child, and my mother was, she had about six brothers and sisters, and they were childhood sweethearts, as I remember them to be. And when I was over in Denmark not long ago, I talked with some of my cousins, and they seemed to be very fond of, especially of my father, on account of that he was a lone child, and they really worshiped him a lot. And I know that as time went on, and father's parents or my grandparents were getting up in years, that there was dad wanted to go back and visit his parents. But my mother's family, my cousins, in other words, they recommend that he did not come because they felt that it would be too hard to break away again. So he never did go back, and he died in about 1945 or something like that. My mother had passed away earlier, about 1933.
Do you know why your father went to the South, to Mississippi? Wasn't
that? Yes, yes. He had a cousin who was located in that area at the time.
What was his cousin's name?
I am not sure. I just really do not know. I know he had a cousin here that showed up here later, and his name was Julius Peterson, but I'm not sure that he was the one that was in Mississippi.
And why did he leave Mississippi to go to Colorado?
Well, I think that he kind of had his eyes notion set on getting into a farming area, and of course, Colorado was a good farming area, and I'm not sure whether he was a little unhappy with the natives of Mississippi, but he told sometimes stories about how he worked on the docks, loading cotton, working with the black people, and he never said anything against them, but he said they were they just couldn't quite keep up with him. He was a little bit more aggressive, and I think that's probably one of the characteristics of the Danish people. And he kind of had a little pride about that, that they had a hard time to keep up with him, and they didn't quite approve of his ambition. And I think maybe that might have been something that might have discouraged him some, and wanted him, caused him maybe to move on. But at any rate, he went through several different kinds of jobs while he was in the Denver area. He worked he was there during the panic of 1990 or 1890. No, he never elaborated. Of course, the thing of it is, it seemed like that while we were a pretty good-sized family, we were together a lot, but it was there was many things that we had to accomplish running a farm in Colorado. We grew sugar beets, and that required lots of hand labor by we children. And we worked, both my sisters and brothers, in the beet fields, thinning the beets, weeding them, pulling them, and topping them, getting ready for market. And it was always, I remember one thing that was quite outstanding for our efforts, that in the fall, when the sugar beets were being paid for by the sugar beet factory, after the folks got the money for that, why, they would spend several evenings in going through the Sears Roebuck catalog, and they would make out an order, and it would probably take maybe a week or two, and in this order would be included things like shoe soles and ginger snaps and clipfisk. Salt herring or salt cod, and then this order was sent in, and then whenever it come, why, there was always some nice things for we children too, and so those are just some of the things that happened. I think that we children as a family worked very much together, and our home was one of the better ones. As a whole.
Would you describe that home for us, the house?
Well, the house, when we first got the farm home in Brush, Colorado, It was a small house, and in a couple of years, why, it was remodeled, and we had three bedrooms upstairs and two bedrooms downstairs, and a large what we call parlor, and a dining room and a kitchen, of course, and then right under the kitchen there was a cellar which had a trap door and the steps leading down to it where we kept some of the fruits and vegetables that was grown during the summer and was kept down there and kept from freezing. And that's I still remember that very well, that these things were always available. We always had food on hand, and usually right after the harvest was completed and the money was brought in, why, Dad would go to town and he would buy a supply of flour and sugar, and that was flour would be probably in the neighborhood of 1,000 pounds, and sugar would be probably 300 or 400 pounds, so that we always had something in reserve. And during the winter or in the fall, why, there would be some cattle butchered, and it would be hung up on the north end of the barn in bags, and the cold weather would preserve it for us, and that's where we got our supply of meat. Our fresh meat was packed. The only thing we had in the line of fresh meat was chicken.
How did your mother wash your clothes?
Well, she just used that old scrub board. It's a plastic, or it wasn't plastic, it was a kind of a glass deal, and just the clothes were first put into a copper boiler and put on the stove and was boiled. And then it was taken out of there and it was put into through this process of just scrubbing it and wringing it out by hand and then hanging it out on the line.
And in the winter when it was so cold, how did she dry the clothing?
It was usually hung up outside, and the freeze would probably take a lot of the moisture out of it.
The freeze, but
it didn't dry completely, but it dry enough so we could bring it in the house and string it up. But it was a kind of a problem. And another thing too that was quite a problem was keeping ourselves clean. And we had to pump all our own water by hand, and we had to heat the water. Whenever we'd take a bath, we'd just have a tub and we would just sit down in that and wash ourselves out the best we could. And I think we were pretty tidy.
Do you remember any of the medicines your mother used when you kids were sick or ill?
Well, our biggest problems were, of course, colds. And we had one which we disliked very much, and I don't know whether it was a real good one or not, but we would take a teaspoonful of kerosene. And I can tell you that was terrible, because you couldn't get rid of that taste for a couple of days. But we did do that, and I'm not sure. I certainly wouldn't recommend it to anybody, because it just does not taste very good.
Did you mix anything?
No, it was taken straight, just a teaspoonful of just kerosene, and then we would go to bed. Then at times, if we had a real hard chest cold, why, there would be, we'd have a kind of a pad or with a little grease on it, and some kerosene put on that to create a kind of a heat, you know. But it was put on in such a way that we had plenty of protection, so that we would not be burned by it. But it did create considerable warmth, so that we could break up that cough. I think it was just plain lard.
Cattle?
Yeah,
beef?
Hog.
Hog?
Yeah. That was one of our principal, We always grew our own hogs. Of course, we did have beef once in a while, but it was principally hogs and chicken that we had. And the hog meat, the ham and the bacon stuff was principally salt, put in salt brine and cured in that way. And then it was taken out of that, and then we used it that way.
Do you ever remember any salesmen coming around?
Yes. Yes, we had a fellow by the name of Jørn Juul was his name, and he was a Dane, and he traveled principally, I think the last time he came to our place, he did have a horse and wagon, and he had lots of trinkets and stuff like that with him, and he stayed overnight usually at our place, and we fed his horse, and so we, my folks would buy some, well, there'd be lace and things like that that Mother could use,
What could your dad use?
What could he use?
What could he purchase from?
Well, I really don't think that he, it was much for him. It was just principally, he was kind of a salesman. He traveled not alone in that area, but I understand that he practically covered the whole United States in the, principally, I think, in the Danish settlement. And he was an interesting fellow. But what I remember about principally was that we kids was interested in some of the, I can't really remember what the folks did buy for us, but it wasn't very much, because there wasn't much spent on anything that wasn't necessary.
Did any salesman come by selling patent medicines?
I don't remember of of any patent medicines of any kind. The one thing I remember about a salesman that came by, and he was selling lightning rods to take care of the electrical storms. We had quite a lot of them, and I remember that he had a device, and he had us family stand around, hold hands, and he would start cranking a little machine that created a little electricity, and as the faster he cranked it, why, the more juice we got. Pretty soon we, you know, got so that we couldn't hold hands anymore. Well, that was to kind of demonstrate how that electricity traveled between things. And so he explained this thing too, and this is the way electricity would strike, and it would strike at a high place, and then would follow these lightning rods and through a copper wire which run down the roof and would go into the ground, which would save the building from fire. But that was one thing that I remember very distinctly about that the salesman did, and we bought them, and most people, I think, in the area had them on their, even on their barns to protect them from these electrical storms.
Did your father buy house insurance or any life insurance?
He never bought any life insurance, I'm sure. And maybe not in the early years, but I'm sure that he had fire insurance on his property after we came to Oregon, which was in 1913.
Do you know of any religious reason why your father would not buy life insurance?
No, I really don't. I think probably that things like that, It was a matter of making the money go round, and I think that things like that might have been maybe discouraged in the fact that we felt like that the money probably could be used to a better advantage. But my dad was a very good operator, and He took care of things as they had to be taken care of, and did the best he could for his family.
How did your father, how did you kids plow the land in Colorado?
It was all done by horsepower. Mm-hmm. And our soil... Pardon?
How many plows?
It was just a walking plow, single plow.
And how many horses?
Usually three. Now, we had, we usually had probably about 8 or 10 horses, and probably would have, there was always a team ready to go for the plow, and then after a certain stage of that, why, then they'd come back with a disc and a harrow and put it in shape. There was one thing about our soils there, they were easy to work, and they were not, it wasn't, had to be a lot of effort put into cultivating, because the ground was loose.
How long would it take you, as example, to plow a 10-acre field?
Well, it would take, I think it would take probably about, the best we could do would be about 2 acres in a day.
What was it that your mother or your father did that carried on the Danish tradition in your home?
Well, I think that that tradition was centered around the church. The whole, I really think, completely. They were very, very active in the church, and we went to Sunday school, and they saw that we were, and also we learned to speak the Danish language.
Were the services and Sunday school conducted in Danish?
Yes. Yes, and the summer school, too, was usually after our regular school term was out, where there'd be probably a month of summer school, which was all in Danish. And usually the minister and a couple of helpers would handle the classes. And we learned to write and to read the Danish, and also studied the religious part of it.
Were you confirmed in Danish?
Yes.
And all your study for confirmation was in Danish?
Yes.
And did you speak Danish in the home?
Yes. We spoke Danish in the home. My mother never spoke anything but Danish. But after we all got a little older, of course, we eventually switched over and was just using the, you might say, the English language entirely. But mother always answered in Danish, and we knew what she was talking about. There was no, it was just like the same language as far as that goes, but it was easy for us to answer in Danish, and it became in such a way that we, as the kids, kind of forgot how to use the Danish language. And I was fortunate enough when I married Helga, and her folks were more Danish, and then I got a job where I was manager of a feed and seed company, and there was lots of Danish, old-time Danes around, that I got to using it more, and it kind of came back to me, and I got so I could use it lots better than I did there for a while.
How did you meet your Danish wife?
Well, it happened right here in Junction City, and of course, the community got together, you know, quite regular at the church and at the Danish Hall, and they started there was a minister that was, they were going to put on some kind of a program, and so they wanted to have some folk dancing, and the minister and his wife were had been in Grandview College, and they were very, very active in that kind of thing, and so he had a bunch of us young folks come, and so he said, he started to kind of couple us off, because we weren't coupled up like the kids do nowadays. So pretty soon, why, he called me over there, he said, Hans, you stand there, and he looked around, he says, well, Helga, you better come over here and stand next to him, you be his partner. And that's the way we started out. And like I tell Helga once in a while, we're still dancing.
What was her maiden name?
Bodker.
Helen?
Helga.
Helga?
Bodker.
Did she have a middle name?
No.
Is that a Danish tradition not to have a middle name?
No, most of them do. Most of them do have a middle name. I have a middle name. All my brothers and sisters have a name, middle name. And I think, well, of course, there's so many of them now that their regular, the Bodkers, their regular name or original name was Nelson. And some of the boys were, they were given a first name and a middle name is Nelson.
What are the names of your brothers and sisters?
My oldest brother's name was Anton, and my brother next to me was Robert, and my youngest one was Holger. And Robert and myself are the only two living brothers now. My three sisters, my oldest sister was Marie, and my second one was Olga, and my youngest one was Emma, and two of them are still alive.
Did you and Hilda have children?
Yeah, we just have one son.
What is his name?
Gerald.
And any grandchildren?
Yes, we have four.
Names.
Yeah. The oldest one's Anne Marie, and the next one is Sonia, and the next one is Karsten, and the youngest one is Alice. And she, her name is really spelled A-L-I-C-E, but she decided to cut that out and make it A-L-I-S. Now, I don't I don't know what the advantage is, but that's the way she wants it.
Is that Danish?
No, I don't believe it is. I don't know whether Alice itself is a Danish name, but of course Anne Marie and Sonia and Karsten are all very Danish.
Have you ever been to Denmark?
Yes, I've made two trips to Denmark.
Now, you were not born and raised in Denmark.
No.
How did the Denmark you see fit the dream you had of Denmark?
Well, I was, it was really, actually, it's a bigger country than I thought it was. And
you're the first one.
And and it, there's more hills, that is small hills, you know, than I thought. I thought it was more of a flat country, laying right out in the water, you know. And I was really pleasantly surprised, and it looks more like Oregon than anything I've ever seen.
And how did you feel about the people?
Oh, I think the people were just great. They were very cooperative, and they just, they seemed to be very interested in what we were over there for, and what we wanted to do, and I think that they were not they didn't.